Hello, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 3, The Third Man, written by Ben Edlund and directed by Robert Singer, where Dean and I do share a more profound bond. I wasn't going to mention it. Season 6 may have been crafted by Kripke personally and show run by Sarah Gamble, but somehow it still largely falls on Ben Edlund to give us the coherent bits of the overarching narrative of the season between this episode, 6:15, The French Mistake, and 6:20, The Man Who Would Be King. This episode also ties in the concept of it's about the souls, which underscores both Sam's soulless arc and the season-long hunt for power through seizing the souls of purgatory. It all takes shape in this episode. Everything that Samuel and the Campbells have been doing trying to find the alphas and stuff, well, it only makes sense when you tie it into this whole drama surrounding Cass and Crowley and their hunt for purgatory soul power. And that pretty much all falls on Edlund until after The Man Who Would Be King, and then only becomes, like, cohesive with the rest of the season at that point. So, if that was the intent, then, you know, I get it. The season's supposed to be noir, but it sometimes was so dark they couldn't really see where they were going. Thank you to Ben Edlund for making this season coherent. Now that Dean has shucked off the burden of feeling obligated to live a life he didn't choose for himself at Lisa and Ben's house, he's free to get sucked back into the business of angels meddling in the business of humans again. Also, now that Sam isn't trying to convince Dean to come back hunting with him, we get to see a bit of Sam on his own turf, so to speak. And it only becomes more clear that something is really, really not right with Sam. We also get more angel lore, and the information that spawned 1,000 headcanons about what Cass's handprint scar on Dean's shoulder actually means. Technically, this is also the first episode where we see Dean shirtless without the handprint, even if it is in a dream sequence and not in reality. We won't get confirmation until the middle of season 7 that the handprint has mysteriously disappeared or faded or whatever headcanon you prefer. But it is all down to this episode and the makeup department having, oopsie, forgotten to apply it before filming, rather than resuming adding it after this little mistake, production just let it disappear without explanation. In this episode specifically, we learn from Balthazar that angels can leave a mark on a human soul, but we'll get into that as we watch the episode, because context helps with that one. I think everyone can see where I'm personally going with this, and might understand why I have a lingering obsession with the handprint as a result. And in fic that I write, it almost always makes an appearance in canon fic because it's got to still be there even as like a mark on his soul. But I tend to like to prefer that it's just a very faded old scar as well on his skin. And while yes, we do finally have Cass back, poor Dean feels like he's just got one more confusing mystery to solve with yet another family member who's very clearly keeping secrets from him and who'd been equally content to abandon Dean for an entire year, even though it's also clear that there have been some major shakeups in Cass's life during that time. Poor Cass. He just tried to do what he thought was right, and as usual, it just made everything worse. But again, we'll get to all of that as it unfolds. We also meet Balthazar, our favorite hedonistic angel, even if we'll only get to keep him for less than a full season. Seriously, out of everyone they ever could have brought back, why not him? We can grumble about that later, but for now, let's get the show on the road where Dean belongs. There's not an awful lot of links for this episode outside of the usual stuff. My tag for it's about 6 pages long, but there's an awful lot of stuff in there about human souls and angel grace, and if any of my thoughts on those subjects is to your liking, you are encouraged to go peruse further. With all of that said, let's jump directly into the then segment. We pick up with Dean waking up to find that Sam had rescued him in the first episode of the season to some dramatic music, learning that Sam had been back for the whole year hunting and hadn't bothered to let Dean know that, and their whole argument surrounding that over a shot of Sam looking in through the window after he'd just arrived back to see Dean with Lisa and just had a weird look on his face. Sam insisting that Dean had always wanted this family and now he had it and he was building it and he didn't want to mess that up. And then it cuts immediately to Lisa telling Dean to go. His whole conversation with Lisa at the end of last week's episode leads directly into him pulling the tarp off the Impala and giving his first real smile of the entire season. We then cut to a series of flashbacks of Cass describing the power of archangels, getting clips of Lucifer, Gabriel, and Raphael, that they are heaven's most terrifying weapon, and Cass summoning Raphael way back at the beginning of season 5, reminding us of their antagonistic relationship. We're also reminded that holy oil fire is a weapon that angels cannot cross the circle when it's on fire, or they will die, which sort of makes the fact that Michael survived holy oil Molotoving seem kind of, Then we get a clip of the season 5 finale of Dean asking Cass what he's going to do now, and Cass saying, return to heaven, I guess. We get shots of angels fighting each other. Cass fighting other angels, with a voiceover that it's probably total chaos in heaven after Michael was locked in the cage, leaving us to wonder what has been happening in heaven for the last year. On that note, we cut to now, in the men's locker room at a police station. One officer is washing his face at the sink while his partner's getting ready for shift. He's like, hey, come on, let's get going, but the guy washing his face is noticing he's bleeding from a couple things on his face and his skin just starts peeling away. He takes a step back and he's leaving bloody footprints on the ground and blood is seeping through his shirt on his back. He turns around and tells his partner, I think I'm bleeding, collapses to the ground in a puddle of squishy goo while his partner is just left to stand there horrified. And then we cut to the title card. And what a truly awful way to die. At least he didn't seem to be in extended pain, I guess, is about the best you could say for that. After the title card, we cut to Dean, lying in bed with Lisa. She wakes him up. They start making out. Things are getting heavier and heavier. And finally, Dean looks up like something is off. And then he's immediately waking up in the Impala as a truck drives by honking its horn. He wasn't with her. He was dreaming he was with her. We saw him wake up with her once already, and it was nothing like what we saw in his dream just now. But again, that was the shot where we saw his shoulder, handprint free, and honestly, they could have remedied that in post. They could have chosen shots that didn't show off that shoulder. They could have added it as in like a white after effecty scar looking thing that had like healed down to what normal old scars look like on human beings. But no, they chose to just, well, we forgot it once. We may as well just abandon the idea that he even still has it. No need to mention why. Just imagine it got healed off of him or, you know, as some after effect of the apocalypse and when he got healed by Cass at the end of 522. People just assumed that was the headcanon offered at a con. It wasn't like some official statement on it or Kripke or Sarah Gamble or anyone else. It was supposed to be there in that scene, and the makeup department forgot to apply it. So they had to roll with it. They chose the most ridiculous fashion in which to do it. Because ironically, this is also the episode that gives us more information about what happens when an angel touches a human soul, which is pretty much how Dean got the handprint scar in the first place. So, we'll get there. We then intercut back and forth between Dean's morning routine and Sam's. Dean looks shaken from his dream. He gets out of the car, stretches, walks around, just looks out into the distance over a lake. Sam is busy doing shirtless push-ups. because he's like a human machine. Dean gets in his car and heads off back on the road as Sam is doing now shirtless pull-ups on a bar across the roof of his motel room as a woman sighs and looks at him. It becomes clear from their conversation that the woman is a hooker, and Sam has to even remind her that he needs to pay her. She was so overwhelmed by the experience of being with Sam Winchester that she was willing to overlook the cash. But when he does pay her, she hands over her phone number and is like, next time, why don't you call me on my night off? Like, I wouldn't even charge you to have that experience again. And all of this is from Sam Winchester, a guy who 2 seasons ago laughed off the idea of ever paying for sex. Apparently, he's fine with that now. We, the audience, are supposed to understand that something is not right with Sam. There's like 5 million different ways they show it, and that's just a tiny little one that you would overlook. He's absolutely cold to this woman as she leaves, and as soon as his phone rings, he just crumples up her phone number and throws it in the trash can. He has no intention of ever calling her again. On the phone is Dean, having stopped to pick up fast food. He's letting Sam know that he's about 8 hours away from the Campbell's headquarters, where apparently he was going to meet up with Sam. And Sam tells him, nope, there's been a change of plans. He's already found another case. And Dean's like, what? Since last night, you already found another case? When Sam's like, great, glad we hashed that out. I'll see you when you get into town. Dean just stares at his phone for a second, like, what the hell is going on with Sam? No small talk, no how you doing, no what's up, or any, just no personal connection at all. And Dean's just slightly weirded out by that. We cut back to the little town in Pennsylvania where Sam is waiting for Dean, only to find another police officer sitting in his cruiser in a little hidden spot in the woods, waiting for speeders to come by. Some guy in a Porsche goes by doing 70, and he's just like, yeah, you can do better than that. And it's like, why are you even bothering? Like, if you're not going to pull over the people going 70 in like a little 35 zone or whatever, you're just not very good at this, are you? He pours a little vodka into his mega big drink. So clearly, we know this guy is not a great cop. Oh, I mean, is there such a thing? But you know what I mean. While he's drinking, his phone rings and he almost spits his vodka out. He's grumpy with the dude who called him. He's like, this has nothing to do with you or me. He's dead, right? We go to work. We go to the funeral. This has nothing to do with us. Stop worrying about it. Just do your job. And hangs up. And something is clearly watching him from the woods and closing in fast on his car. We don't get to see what it was, but we get to see the results of it. Boils erupt all over this man's skin, and we hear like the angelic magic whispery voices noises as he dies from boils. And again, I think that's probably an even worse way to go than becoming a blood splat. When Dean pulls up behind Sam's car outside the police station where their new case is taking place, he's on the phone with Ben, telling Ben that he knows Ben is lying about something. Just tell his mother he broke it, man up, and do the right thing. And Ben asks how Dean knows he's lying, and he's like, because I lie professionally. And it's like, yes, we know Dean is a good liar. He's quick on his feet. He can make up a story to get himself out of almost any situation. Sometimes it completely fails him, but usually he does a pretty damn good job of it. He's been doing it his whole life. He's been lying to Sam his whole life, and that's why he kind of knows that Sam is lying to him now about everything, which will ironically come out in the next 4 episodes when they have an encounter with Veritas, the goddess of truth. So if you don't think that's an important plot point here, and I'm wasting too much time talking about it, it's sort of the key to Dean's personality. Sam teases Dean a little bit about shaping the minds of tomorrow. Who knew that that would be you? And Dean's like, yeah. And then Sam asks Dean how he's doing. Like, how'd Lisa take it when he bailed? And Dean's like, surprisingly cool about it. And Sam's like, good. better for everybody, and then just walks away. And Dean is like, okay, that's remarkably un-Sam-ish. Sam is usually like all emo about this kind of stuff, and he can't even give anything more than a just dismissal of it, as if this whole year of Dean's life is just, oh, yeah, I guess that's better for everybody. And knowing what we know about how Sam will react once he's reunited with his soul and learns all this information again, that Dean spent a year with Lisa and Ben and things just didn't work out without the context of his memories of all of this, it kind of hits what real Sam would have done in this circumstance, you know, kind of solemn and compassionate. Dean tries to bite back with a little zinger about Sam's plastic piece of crap that he's driving, and Sam taunts him about his mileage, like how much gas mileage he gets in the Impala, and Dean's like, oh, shut up. And the funny thing is, the car that Sam's driving, it gets about the same gas mileage as the Impala does, so I don't know what he's complaining about. As they enter the morgue, Sam explains the case as he understands it so far. Sam describes the first case as the guy was basically liquefied into blood. No bones, no tissue, nothing left except squishy bits and blood. And Dean's like, well, I don't get it. Why are we in the morgue if there's probably nothing left to see of the guy? And Sam's like, oh, we aren't here for him. We're here for Mr. Boyles. Dean's first instinct, looking at the guy who'd basically suffocated from boils in his airways, was this looks like witchcraft, and Sam has found no evidence of any hex work at all. They assume there has to be some sort of connection between these two bizarre deaths, and there was a witness, the liquefied cop's partner that we saw in the cold open. So Sam and Dean go to talk to him. Dean takes a different driving route than Sam, just so he can cut him off and make it there first. He gets out of the car all cool and casual, and Sam's like, were you racing me? And Dean's like, no, I was kicking your ass. Dean has some sort of weird vendetta against Sam's car, because Sam turned down the offer of the Impala in the season opener, because he likes the way he has his car set up. And Dean kind of hates that. They're still driving separate cars and not working as partners directly, living completely separate lives even though they're partnering on this case. They knock on the cop's door, and he's in his dress blues and all decked out like he's going to the funeral for his friend. And they tell him that they're FBI and need to ask him a few questions about his partner's death. Officer Colfax just tells them not to worry about it, that it's nobody's business. He tells them again, don't worry about it, and then just slams the door in their faces. And rather than knock again, or Sam just rears back and kicks the door in. Dean's like, what the hell? But follows Sam inside, where they see every photograph hanging in this guy's house has the faces scratched out of them. That's not normal. They find the cop sitting at his desk, using a knife to scratch the face out of yet another photograph. They ask him if he's all right, and he's like, don't worry about it. He's clearly not all right. Dean just tries to be rational with him, letting him know that his partner died of unnatural causes, and they were just wondering if he had any enemies. And Officer Colfax is scratching his head through his hat. And he's like, yeah, you could say that. Officer Colfax tells them that they both had it coming. And that he does too. And that he'll be the next to go. And he's sitting there pouring whiskey into a coffee mug. But he believes that after he dies, it'll be over. That God will be satisfied. Dean asks why God wants them all dead, and the officer knocks over his whiskey bottle and just watches it all pour out on the floor and says it's because of Christopher Birch. He tells them that Christopher Birch is a kid with no face and a planted gun. And then blood starts to leak down from beneath his hat. And then he collapses dead on the table. They hear a weird noise, and Sam tips the guy's hat off to see a bunch of locusts crawling out of a hole in the man's skull. And again, what a really terrible way to die. They all realize that these are three of the biblical plagues of Egypt. blood, boils, locusts, but why are they just affecting one guy? Sam has learned, though, that Christopher Birch was a real kid who was killed after a traffic stop, where those three officers filed the exact same police report that the kid exited the vehicle brandishing a firearm, and they were forced to fire their guns at him. And that's where you get confused, because the planted gun line turns out that Christopher Birch was not brandishing a gun at them, but they were all exonerated for it. Sam wonders if maybe the guy was right, that it's just heaven taking revenge against a bunch of bad cops, and now it's over. Maybe angels are just bored and meddling in human affairs. They've got nothing else to do after the apocalypse fizzled out. Dean suggests that they call Cass to ask him what the hell's going on. Sam's like, you're kidding, right? Guy doesn't answer his phone. You know, he's not been responding. It's the first, second, and third thing I did when I came back from hell, and he has never answered me in a year. Dean is drinking a Schultz beer, the beer of death and debt. He's kind of owed a lot right now. And he prays to Cass to get his feathery ass down there. Sam's like, you're an idiot. And Dean's like, no, stay positive. Sam's like, I am positive. Which is a great line, Sam. Dean continues to tell Cass not to be a dick. They've got a plague-like situation. Do you copy? And he opens one eye and looks around, and waiting to see Cass appear like he always did before. Which makes me wonder if Dean has even tried praying to Cass in the last year. He was cut off from everybody. He didn't call Bobby of his own initiative. He just didn't call Cass of his own initiative. He was trying to live up to the promise that he made. Sam gets all smug when Cass doesn't appear immediately. Like, the son of a bitch doesn't answer. And then Dean goes wide-eyed. And Sam's like, he's standing right behind me, isn't he? Yes, he is. And at this point, Sam is justifiably angry. All it took for Dean to get Cass down there was to pray one time. And Sam has been basically praying at Cass for a year to get any sort of help or answers or anything. And Cass has never responded even once. Sam has been confused and distressed about his situation, and yet Cass couldn't even be bothered to show up. Sam's like, what, so you like Dean better or something? And Cass freezes for a second and is like, well, Dean and I do share a more profound bond. And he looks back at Dean and like, I wasn't going to say anything about it, you know? And yes, of course, we know that he and Dean have a more profound bond. They've got that handprint thing. They've got the whole Cass was sent to rescue Dean from hell thing going on. But Dean is also justifiably upset with Cass. He's like, you know, Sam took one for the team. He went to hell for us, you know, and you can't even be bothered to give him the heads up about what's going on. Cass is like, well, if I had any answers, I would have given them to Sam, but I don't know what's going on with you, Sam. And Dean's response is, well, then you should have shown up and said, hey, how you doing? I don't have any answers for you. Dean is just standing up for Sam. He's like, if he does call you, you answer him, even if it's just to say, I don't know. You know, just because we have some sort of bond. Cass rolls his eyes like, you think I came because you called? I came because of this. And he walks over to the table where all their evidence from their case is laid out. It becomes clear that Heaven is not behind these killings, and Cass doesn't know what is. Or he says he doesn't know what is. And he says he doesn't know who rescued Sam from the cage, but we all know it was him. And part of the reason he hasn't responded to Sam all season is guilt, because he knows something's wrong and he's got other problems he's got to deal with. I think he just doesn't want to have to explain any of that to Sam and Dean. That's why he's been staying away. The choices that he made a year ago, that he's been working on ever since, he knows that they would try and talk him out of it. But he also is trying to keep them out of it the best way that he can. It just makes it very difficult for Cass to be around them. So instead of trying to rekindle friendly feelings with them, he's just being abrasive as fuck. Cass tells them that Heaven may not have committed these killings, but there's only one weapon in existence that could have brought these curses into existence. It's the Staff of Moses. Cass realizes that it's not being used at full power, turning rivers into blood and stuff, but turning one guy into blood, and he rules out Moses as the potential wielder of the staff. Dean asks how that weapon could have gotten back onto Earth in the first place, and Cass says before the apocalypse, Heaven may have been corrupt, but at least it was stable. After the apocalypse failed, it's been chaos. Things have disappeared. Cass tells Sam and Dean that he needs their help to find this weapon. And Sam's like, oh, you need our help? That's rich. And Cass can't take it anymore. That's when he busts out the people skills being rusty line. That leaving this weapon on Earth is not something that they can do. They must find it. And they must find the angel who took it out of Heaven. Because there's no telling the chaos that might come about because of it. Sam points out that they only really have one lead to follow. The one thing that connected these three cops was the father of the slain boy was seeking an investigation into his death. We then cut to that father, who's reading another article in the newspaper about the third dead cop, and he does not look happy at all. And he's got a younger son there who's like, why are you reading that again? Just can we throw it away already? He tells the boy to go out back and play, and then starts cutting out the article when Sam, Dean, and Cass just show up in his living room. And Dean complains, Cass, can't you give us a little warning next time? Like, maybe zap us outside of the house where we're going instead of into some guy's living room? Mr. Birch is freaked out. How'd you get in here? Sam tells him that they're federal agents, and I think when they materialized in his living room, it was past the point of having to put that lie up as a front. But he didn't notice them just materialize. He thought they walked in. So they roll with it. They point out his collection of articles about the dead cops. Sam immediately tells him they know the truth, that his son didn't have a gun and the cops shot him and tried to make it a cover-up. The father's like, yeah, but they're getting theirs. And Dean's like, yeah, and who's killing them? Like, they're accusing him of killing these cops. And he's like, me? Look at how they died. You know, like, I can't kill people like that. It's just absolutely freaky. And Cass just comes right out and says, you smoked them with the Staff of Moses. And he's like, what the hell kind of fed are you? Cass's people skills really are rusty, but honestly, the last time that he met up with Raphael to deal with anything, this is about how he was acting then too. Cass is just like, we don't have time for this. And he walks up to the man and a voice behind him says, leave my dad alone. And he's holding out a little piece of a stick, kind of shaped like a gun, and pointing it at them. They immediately recognize it as the Staff of Moses, but wonder why it's not bigger. It's been sawed off. It's only a tiny piece of the Staff of Moses. The boy's father tries to tell him to get out of there to run, and Cass just reaches out and puts the man to sleep. Cass then flaps over behind the boy and just takes the stick out of his hand. Dean tries to be reassuring with him, we're not going to hurt you, we just want to know what's going on here. Aaron is now freaking out, and Dean's like, we don't want anything from you except to know where you got this. Aaron tells them that he got it from an angel. He'd prayed to God every night that the people who'd killed his brother would pay for what they did, and God didn't answer, but this angel did. He doesn't know his name, but he told Aaron that he could have justice. After a little bit of prodding, we learn that Aaron traded something for the weapon. It takes quite a bit of digging to get it out of him, that he traded his soul to the angel, which comes as a shock to all of them. But I like Cass's reaction here, because we know that this season is all about the souls, fact that Sam doesn't have one right now, the fact that something fishy is going on with the monster population, that Cass is trying to gain power through the use of souls, whether it be purgatory souls or his and Balthazar's weird attempt to resurrect the Titanic so that they could have 50,000 additional souls to power their war machine. All of this stuff about the power of human souls this season all starts with Edlund's storyline here. But Cass's reaction, almost like, oh no, this isn't what I asked of my followers. Because we know he already has followers here at this point. People who've rebelled against Raphael in heaven. People who don't, I mean, by people, I mean angels, who don't want another apocalypse to happen. Who are happy enough just being allowed to go back to how things were before. And Balthazar may not yet know what Cass's full plans are, and I don't think he really does know what Cass's full plans are until right towards the very end for him. But he's got this idea about the souls and having that as like an insurance policy and a power boost. I don't know if Cass gets that idea from Balthazar here, or if Balthazar got the idea just by overhearing some of the things that Cass has been up to. But either way, it's kind of disturbing knowing that Cass here probably knows more about the origin of this idea than he ever lets on to Sam and Dean. Dean asks Cass if it's even possible for an angel to buy someone's soul, and Cass is like, well, it's never happened before, but it explains why he cut the staff into pieces. More pieces, more product, more people he can trade with for their souls. And then he just reaches out and boops Aaron to sleep. Dean's like, what the hell did you do that for? Cass is like, portability. And he zaps them all back to their hotel room. Like, dude, Cass, why couldn't you just handle this where you were? Why transport this poor kid? Cass explains that if this boy really did trade his soul to an angel, it would create a claim on his soul, a mark or a brand. Sort of like the handprint that has conspicuously gone missing from Dean's arm in this episode. Like, maybe somewhere down deep, somebody did not want to imply that the angel's claim on Dean's soul that left that brand was an ongoing thing. And even though Aaron Birch doesn't have a claim on his skin, it's only on his soul that Cass has to ram an arm into his chest to read. It's kind of a reminder of his more profound bond with Dean and what the extent of that is. Cass tells them that he can read the mark on Aaron's soul and discover the name of the angel. And Dean asks how. Cass tells him, excruciatingly for him, it will be a horrible experience. He starts rolling up his sleeve and Dean's like, whoa, 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 you can't do this. Can't torture a kid for information. Dean turns to Sam, expecting support for his position of, hey, no, we don't torture kids for info. And Sam just stands there with his arms crossed and kind of like, oh, will it leave any permanent damage? And Cass assures him, no, physically there will be minimal damage. Dean just cannot accept that either of these people that he cares about are even considering this, let alone apparently endorsing it. Dean says there has to be another way, and Cass says there is no other way to get this information. Dean's like, but you're going to torture a kid for it. And Cass is just like, I can't care about that, Dean. This is too big. This is too important. I don't have the luxury. There's a lot going on in Cass's life that we know nothing about at this point. And it is jarring and upsetting to Dean that he has no idea what Cass is going through. And he gets this, but it's just seeing this change come over Cass, who was once compassionate for humanity, at least. And he's back to, I can't care about that. You know, like, I wish I could, but I can't. And meanwhile, Sam is just standing there like a robotic soldier, just waiting for the information. Dean is finding no comfort from any of the people who, until he left at the end of season 5, he thought of as his closest confidants and family members. At least Aaron is still asleep, unconscious, whatever Cass did to him, when Cass sticks his hand in. And he just starts screaming as Cass starts rummaging around in his soul. His chest lights up and red illuminated veins appear on his skin as he writhes in agony. And Dean tries to go to the kid and Sam restrains Dean. Dean throws Sam off like the hell. And we're shown a shot of Dean watching this, tormented by having to watch it. And he glances over at Sam, who was watching with great interest. Like, this is a fascinating process, and he cannot wait to get the scientific results from it, as this poor boy just writhes in agony. And Dean's kind of horrified that Sam is reacting the way he is. As soon as Cass is done, Aaron returns to the peaceful sleep that Cass had put him into before. Thank God. Hopefully he has very little memory of it. But Cass did get a name of an angel he believed had died during the war. He was a good friend of Cass. And he's like, Balthazar, what are you doing? And as soon as he says the name, another angel appears in the room and is like, Balthazar, thank you. It's like he'd been eavesdropping on them, just waiting for the name. And it's like, dude, if you really wanted to be secretive about it, why would you have bothered to pop in and confirm the name out loud? He thanks Cass, tells him they'll make good use of the name, and then attacks with an angel blade like he's going to kill Cass now that he got this information. And it's like, dude, you really think it's that easy to kill Cass? Come on. You could have just zapped away, taken the information to your bosses, and just been like, eh, what was I going to do? Kill him? You got to be kidding me. As they're fighting, the other angel tells Cass, by the way, Raphael says hello. Reminding us of that ongoing, long-lasting conflict between Cass and Raphael. The other angel manages to get Cass's angel blade and comes at Cass with both blades, thinking he now has the upper hand. And Cass knocks both blades away from that angel and tackles him out the window, at which point they land on Sam's crappy plastic car. By the time Cass gets up, the other angel has zapped off. And poor Sam's crappy plastic car's car alarm is just going off, and Dean thinks this is absolutely hilarious. When Cass zaps back up into the room, Sam and Dean realize there's more information that they need. Who was that guy, and why was he attacking us? Cass lays out that he was a soldier of Raphael, and he must have followed Cass there when he answered their call. They are clearly missing a much larger piece of the picture here. If Heaven is wrapped up in this and following Cass around, like, what the hell is going on? Dean tells Cass they're not doing anything else until they get an explanation. Cass says it's very simple. Raphael and his followers want him to rule Heaven, and Cass and many others don't want that at all. Sam figures it out. There's a civil war happening up there, and Cass is like, technically, yeah, that's why we need to find Balthazar and his weapons. We could use that to help defeat Raphael and his people. Dean asks what Raphael would do if he won the war, if he got the weapons first, and Cass is like, what he always wanted. He wants to end the story the way it was written, restart the apocalypse, go through with the whole fight as it was supposed to have happened, end the world. Cass zaps away without answering their questions and comes back with myrrh, and he starts drawing a sigil and like only half paying attention to Sam and Dean. But Dean realizes there's some really big questions here that are not getting answered. Like, why didn't you tell us any of this? If this has been going on with you for a year, how come we're just hearing about it now? Because not only does it involve Cass and all the angels and stuff, if Raphael wants the apocalypse to come back and to play out exactly as it was written, that would very deeply involve Sam and Dean, the original vessels of Michael and Lucifer for the purpose of the apocalypse. So getting this information seems kind of important to Sam and Dean, especially Dean, who was apparently left in the complete dark about it for a year. Cass replies that he was ashamed. He then apologizes to Dean, and I mean, Dean was starting to feel slightly sympathetic toward Cass again, like, dude, I get it. We've all screwed up. But then Cass just reaches out, grabs Dean's arm, and cuts his palm to get blood for his spell. Dean asks why he didn't use his own blood, and Cass is like, it wouldn't work. I'm not human. Cass goes through with the spell. We can hear police sirens getting louder in the distance, probably in response to the bodies falling out of a window, crashing onto Sam's car. When Cass is like, I got him, let's go. Dean's like, what about the kid? Cass is just like, don't you think the police will take him home? And it's like, Cass, we've got bigger issues than that. Like, me and Sam finding some random kid in our motel room who's going to have this wackadoo story. And guys who apparently fell out of a window and then just disappeared. And what's going to happen when the police look at Sam's smashed up car? Are they going to pry the trunk open and find a bunch of weapons in there? Like, I think they have bigger issues. But apparently not. Maybe they had Cass mojo all the weapons to the Impala's trunk for the time being. Who knows? Whatever. It never becomes relevant again. Instead, we are zapped to a very fancy house later that night, where Cass proves that he understands the concept of zapping to the exterior of someone's home for the sake of politeness and whatever. Inside the house, Cass finds a giant frog sitting at the top of a staircase. He zaps himself up there and then enters another room where he hears music playing. A door locks behind Cass, and he drops his angel blade into his hand, and when he turns around again, Balthazar is there. He tells Cass it's good to see him. The angel that Cass had been fighting with earlier is already dead on the floor, and Balthazar makes a joke about a frog in the throat, and a frog crawls out of the guy's mouth. Like, he turned that angel into a frog with one of his little magical toys. Cass confronts Balthazar about the fact that he had grieved Balthazar's death. He believed he'd been killed during their first war. And Balthazar explains that he faked his own death. He wanted everyone to think he was dead so that he could just take a few things that he might need on Earth, and he was just running away to live the life, sort of like we know Gabriel did when he ran off to become Loki. Cass tells Balthazar that he needs his help. Balthazar's like, of course, as far as I'm concerned, we're brothers. I will help you. He killed the other angel who was on Raphael's side, but Cass he will welcome and offer his help to. So Cass asks for the weapons, and Balthazar's like, anything but that. I will not give you the weapons. Balthazar tells Cass that he's following in his footsteps, that it wasn't just about walking away from heaven. It's that he stopped the big plan and basically gave them the ability to choose whatever they wanted to do. Balthazar is like one of the few angels who actually understood the lesson, at least to an extent, that he could do whatever he wanted. He could do everything if he wanted to. He didn't have to follow orders. He could just make his own way. But Cass is a little bit distressed by this. He's like, yeah, I wanted you all to choose your own destinies or whatever and not follow orders anymore, but my God, I didn't want you interfering with humanity and getting people killed and buying their souls. This is just way beyond what Cass ever could have wanted for the angels to do. So again, why I say Balthazar kind of learned the lesson, not really. Balthazar is just reveling in the complete freedom, and Cass is like, and this is what you choose to do with it? And Balthazar's like, yeah, who cares? It's not like Dad's coming back. And in its own way, it's just as nihilistic as Cass's, well, why don't we just imbibe copious quantities of alcohol and wait for the inevitable blast wave from the season 5 finale. It's just a different flavor of nihilism. It's like nothing matters, so who cares? I'm just going to do everything. And Cass is like, no, everything matters. It's civil war up there. If we can beat Raphael, we can end this. Balthazar just laughs and he's like, nope, not going to happen. I'm not giving you the weapons. Balthazar says something here that proves extremely prophetic. He thinks it's funny that Cass believes he can stop the infighting in heaven. He's like, it will never stop. No matter what you do, you might kill Raphael, you might kill whoever you think is the agitator here, but the fighting between the angels will never end. So from that point of view, Balthazar is probably the most in touch with reality angel, the sanest, the one with the best plan. His advice is grab something valuable and fake your own death. And Cass is just like, you're insane. Cass still truly believes that he can save heaven, that he can save his family of angels, that he can put everything to rights. Cass, it never really was paradise in heaven. It was just following orders, under the grind, under the penalty and threat of God returning and being disappointed in them or smiting them for their failure to serve correctly. And Cass proved that that's not the penalty for behaving poorly or not following orders, that, you know, everything just kept right on going. And Balthazar's like, well, all right then, if there's not any consequences, I'm just going to live as best I can for as long as I can, and whatever comes, so be it. And Cass thinks that's insane, even though that's honestly a refreshingly human take from Balthazar, even in its nihilism. And I'm going to pause here for just a minute to comment on Cass's sense of duty to heaven. His feeling that there is something there to be saved is going to become his downfall over and over again until he finally is able to relinquish that sense of duty. And it never fully materializes in canon, tragically. But even just looking at the end of season 6 and the beginning of season 7, which was supposed to be his ultimate penalty and his final sacrifice of himself, he kind of goes slightly insane trying to wipe out any sort of antagonism in heaven and completely fails. And it is his downfall, this actually insane plot that maybe there's something there he can fix. He might be starting to understand free will, but he's trying to inflict his on all the other angels, and it just doesn't work that way. Cass tells Balthazar that he's sorry, but regardless, Raphael's gonna know your whereabouts by now. His angel would have reported that back. And Balthazar's unconcerned by this. He's like, let Raphael show up then. I am armed. He can do whatever he wants. But regardless, it is good to see you again, Cass. And before he can finish his sentence, we hear lightning, which heralded Raphael's first appearance in canon. Balthazar asks Cass if that thunder rolling is him. Cass just shakes his head and he's like, ah, that's my cue then. Tell Raphael to bite me. And he snaps his fingers and disappears as all the power goes out in the house. And three angels appear out on the lawn. Raphael and two of his goons. Sam approaches one of them, who's scouting the perimeter of the building. And he's like, hey, how you doing? And the angel holds up an angel blade and Sam's like, yeah, I got one of those too. The other angel appears behind Sam with an angel blade to his throat. And he's like, you think you can knife fight an angel? And that's when Dean appears. He's like, who's fighting? Peace out. And slaps his hand on an angel banishing sigil. And both of their angels are banished. Very convenient. Another angel approaches Cass indoors. And Cass is like, peace, brother. You don't have to do this. There is another way. You don't have to fight me. Don't make me do this. He basically gives the guy every opportunity to stand down and not attack. The guy just comes without saying a word right at Cass. Finally, Cass is just like, fuck it. Flips his angel blade around and throws it at the guy's chest, killing him. My God, my dude. He tried to tell you to back off, to stand down. And the look on Cass's face is just tormented by having to have done this. Already several angels have died here, and he can't stop it. He just wants them all to stop fighting. After the angel drops to the ground, Cass is just like, why won't any of you listen? This is paining him to no end, and he's in agony over it. And I totally get why he's trying to do this and why he's kept it from Sam and Dean. He is ashamed, but he's also responsible for it. He's just so torn up about it. Because the only reason he's chosen to do any of this was because Dean had promised Sam to get out of hunting, that he would not get involved, that he would just stay in suburbia living a normal life. And Cass was trying to let Dean honor that promise, especially after he watched Sam walk away, apparently of his own free will, and not because he didn't have a soul to know any better. And all of it has come to this, and even Dean is not safe and protected anymore. He's been sucked right back into all of this drama, and it's killing Cass. Raphael appears behind Cass and says, "They never listen, Castiel, because their hearts are mine." And he just starts flinging Cass around, kicks Cass around, beats him up for a while, throws him down a couple flights of stairs. And at the bottom, he just pummels Cass and pulls out an angel blade, telling Cass, "I don't think God's gonna bring you back this time." And he raises the blade as he's gonna stab Cass, and someone yells out from behind him, "Hey!" And it's Balthazar with another one of his heavenly weapons. He tells Raphael to look at his junk, and Raphael's like, "No!" And his vessel turns to salt and crumbles. Balthazar finds this hilarious. He's like, "Yeah, the same thing happened to Lot's wife." And Cass is shocked that Balthazar actually came back. Balthazar warns Cass that, yeah, he's going to have to go shopping for a new vessel, but Raphael will eventually be back again too. So, till next time, and he's about to flap away, and Dean's like, "Yeah, there's no time like the present." And he drops a lighter and lights holy oil circle around Balthazar. So, Dean had been setting that up, and Balthazar was just conveniently standing in the right place. Cass had been willing to let Balthazar just flap away. At least he knows that Balthazar is on his side, even if he won't actively share his weapons. Balthazar's angry with Dean, demands to be released, and Dean's like, "Not until you take the marker off of Aaron Birch's soul." He doesn't want to do that, and Dean calls for Sam, who has a whole jar of holy oil that they're willing to throw all over Balthazar, which most normal angels, that would kill them. Apparently even Raphael, who refused to cross the holy oil. Just Michael is immune, apparently. Balthazar pleads to Cass, "I stood for you in heaven. Are you going to let this hairless ape talk to me this way?" And Cass is like, "I believe the hairless ape has the floor." Because in the moment, Cass couldn't care about hurting the kid. But the whole "I bought his soul" thing does not sit right with Cass. And I think Dean's slightly relieved that Cass is on his side about this. Balthazar doesn't need to be asked twice. He does something that looks like a little prayer, holding his hands to his forehead, and says that the boy's debt is cleared, his soul is free. Dean asks him why he's buying up human souls anyway, and Balthazar's like, "In this economy? Are you kidding? Souls are about the only thing that are worth anything. You know what a human soul is worth? What power they hold?" And this is news to Dean and Sam. Balthazar then demands to be released, and Dean's like, "Suck it, I'm not releasing you." But Cass just waves a hand, and the holy fire goes out. Even if Sam and Dean are confused and stunned by this information, Cass apparently has heard enough. Cass tells Balthazar that his debt to Balthazar is now cleared as well, and Balthazar agrees. They're walking away from this as equals, who don't owe each other anything, but are still brothers in arms. Dean turns to Cass when Balthazar flaps away and's like, "Are you out of your mind?" And before Cass can answer, he flaps away as well, leaving Sam and Dean there with this horrific mess to clean up and no answers whatsoever. And that was our first big hint of the season that something about this has to do with souls, that souls are a power source and a currency that are being actively traded right now or hoarded right now for reasons unknown, but clearly linked to whatever is going on in heaven. This back and forth battle where angels are just willing to kill each other, even when it torments Cass to have to do so. But that's how big the stakes are in heaven right now. Angel on angel violence, and they don't seem to have any remorse over it. It's enough to lead Cass to some incredibly desperate measures in the interest of stopping heaven from self-destructing like this. The next morning at the Impala, Sam is collecting his gear and trying to find room for it in the back of the Impala, and Dean's like, man, I didn't realize I had so much stuff back here. And as Sam throws his gear in the He notices a weird mask in the trunk. Dean tells him it was Ben's Halloween costume. Sam correctly guesses Wendigo and compliments it as being accurate. As they each approach their side of the car to get in, Dean asks Sam, so are you okay? And Sam just looks at him like, yeah, well, of course, why wouldn't I be? Dean is concerned, though. He's like, there's been a few times where it really seems like you were not okay. Like when Cass was giving the holy taser treatment to that kid. Where were you? Sam's like, I was right there. Dean's like, really? Were you? Dean got the feeling that Sam didn't even care that they had to torture the kid. Sam tells Dean he's wrong, and Dean's like, well, you know, I'm just trying to figure this out because something is definitely different with you. Sam tries to pass it off as because he'd been hunting out in the wild for like a year, and he's probably just rough around the edges. Dean thinks there's something more to it that he's not getting, that Sam is not sharing with him. And Dean suggests, well, you know what? You went to hell, and I kind of know what that does to a guy. And Sam cuts him off, and he's like, no, no, you know what it did to you. It tortured you. I think it still does. But Dean, I'm fine. And to Sam, that's enough explanation. Dean is just even more deeply suspicious of him now. Like, this is not adding up. This is not how Sam would react to any of this. And all of this is framed as the car is parked by this little waterway that is like jammed up with cut logs. Like a log jam that's preventing the river from flowing properly. And that's kind of where they're at emotionally. Dean wants answers. Sam is avoiding giving any, and he don't think he really understands or knows what the answers are. And that's also what he's getting from Cass. Cass clearly knows something about what's going on in the universe, and yet he's not giving them answers either. Poor Dean. He's riding a logjam until something eventually will break. And unfortunately, nothing is going to break for a few more episodes yet. He's just going to be stuck dealing with Robo Sam and begging for help from anyone. And next week, he's going to be begging for help from Bobby, because that's how this episode ends. And our next episode is Season 6, Episode 4, Weekend at Bobby's, where Jensen is written very lightly into the episode because he directed it. His very first directorial effort. But we start to get at least Dean expressing how distressed he is about Sam, and Bobby lashing back and saying, you know what? I'm trying to get myself out from under this demon deal. Maybe you could at least consider my feelings once in a while. And Dean and Sam both are like, Bobby, all you had to do was ask. And that's what Dean is trying to do in the next episode as well. He's trying to ask Bobby for help. And Bobby asks him for help. And at least one of them gets some help out of this deal. Anyway, so we got some new angel lore in this episode. We meet Balthazar. We know Raphael is back in charge of heaven. And that things are going incredibly poorly up there. That Cass has been out of touch for a year, has not been answering Sam's prayers, and a part of me has always wondered if the reason Cass hadn't been answering Sam's prayers was because he couldn't hear the prayers of someone who didn't have a soul. Kind of makes you wonder, Is that the key here? Souls have power, after all. Sam is lacking one. Maybe Cass just never heard the prayer. He's acting as if he had and just ignored it, but he seemed kind of surprised. He was not expecting, when he showed up there in this episode, to take heat from ignoring them for a year. I don't think he was. I think this was a genuine shock to him to learn that Sam had been praying to him and he could not respond. So I've always just chalked it up to Cass never heard Sam's prayers because he didn't have a soul. But once Dean is like, dude, you're going to answer his prayers, I think Cass kind of always kept one antenna out in Sam's direction to hopefully catch anything that sounded like a prayer from Sam. Just keeping like a little ping open for when Sam called his name or whatever. Because we know he will answer one of Sam's prayers later on before Sam gets his soul back. So I think this whole year, he's just been unable to detect it. But we've also learned that angels can leave a mark on a human soul. And Cass had never heard of an angel actually doing it until Balthazar. But holy crap, does that ever resonate with the handprint? Even if it was done entirely accidentally, that resonates so hard. And Cass may have healed the mark on Dean's arm. I still think there would have to be some sort of scar there, but that's just because I like that idea. But there is some deeper connection. As Cass said, Dean and I do share a more profound bond, and that only grows stronger and stronger. And Dean begins, once he's got Sam back, has more mental real estate to start understanding that bond he has with Cass and why it hurts so much now that Cass is shutting them out and keeping them in the dark and sneaking around and doing all this stuff behind their backs. And it does, I think, come back to a lot of shame on Cass's part. Shame that he even made the deal that we know he made. And shame that he didn't go to Dean for help when Dean got roped back into this and so much worse than he would have had if he had gone to Dean right away in the beginning and worked out something. So, yeah, it's a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. I'm just going to throw in a few final thoughts here about heaven and human souls and the power of souls and the power of heaven, because we've had many things in canon that try and explain where the power source of heaven really is. Is it angels, as Naomi will later imply, when the power of heaven seems to be failing? Or is it human souls, as so many other angels seem to imply, from Balthazar wanting to buy human souls to increase his own power, to the Grigori angels who feed off of human souls so that they can feel more in touch with heaven when they have been disconnected from heaven? What actually powers heaven, and therefore what actually powers angels when they are not cut off from heaven versus when they are cut off from heaven? And the common denominator always comes back to human souls that plays that huge role at the end of season 11 in defeating Amara. Not in blowing her up with the power of human souls, but just Dean Humanity Winchester standing in front of her filled with the power of thousands of human souls and just making a very human plea to her. And it's like, I will never not think that Chuck wasn't just manipulating heaven's structure in season 14 and season 15 when it was supposedly collapsing, just because it worked to his advantage. As the angels all began disappearing through infighting that begins even now with Cass and the civil war in heaven, it wasn't Cass who did all of that. He didn't destroy the power of heaven. All that power is still there in the form of billions of human souls. It's just not being funneled into powering the angels anymore. Like, that connection got severed. And Chuck, just being the asshat he is and trying to manipulate things to create drama and tension. And honestly, I don't think the angels are as an important part of Chuck's narrative as they like to think they are. And I don't think heaven or its structure are an important part of Chuck's narrative as they like to think they are. So, whatever. But a lot of those questions will come up later in the series. And I just want to have this to fall back on, that everybody's kind of already starting to think about it, because, to be completely clear, this is one of my favorite subjects to think about in Supernatural canon. I just love this completely nebulous description of how all of this functions in canon, and yet there's very little that actually conflicts if you find the through line through all of it, which I'm trying to lay down here for everybody. I mean, that was part of the reason I started doing this podcast in the first place. So hopefully everybody else can follow along my random tangents like this throughout the series. And maybe someday I'll actually get my thoughts in a proper, like, essay format. But for now, y'all get me rambling about it. So thanks for listening. Anyway. We'll get more into that next week. And until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord, still at Mittens #4865, until they either decide or not to go through with the name change plan on Discord. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And honestly, right now, I'm just happy that things are still going smoothly with my schedule. And this is the third episode in a row that I've gotten out without having anything come up and stop me. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get back to writing, and it's been like 2 months now since I've written anything in my latest story that I've been working on. So I don't even remember what it was about at this point, you know? I really should just dedicate all my free nights between podcasts to writing like I used to. And now that I'm back caught up with pretty much everything else in my normal life, I have like 2 other things I need to do before I can count myself fully back to being caught up. But we're close now, and that's good. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.